Green Lantern Spotlight podcast would like to bid farewell to longtime member Musard, who has been with us for 40 episodes. We wish you the best. We wish you well. And thank you for being with us all this time. Thank you. Listening to the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, episode 42 for February 2010.
It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me. From the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of evil light. The spirit tries to swallow me.
And now, the host of the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, Frankie Mateo.
This is Green Lantern Spotlight for February 2010. Welcome everyone to today's session of Green Lantern Spotlight, the premier spot to acquire a bit of insight on subjects such as why was Lady Shiva in the question issue? Also be aware of our sponsor site, thegreenlanterncore.com. A humble place to discuss all sorts of Green Lantern-related news and rumors. Remember, that's the greenlanterncore.com. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Frankie Mateo, formerly known as Rainer 2814. We have with us Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the hit site, speciesite.proboards.com. How you doing, Brandon?
Okay.
We also have with us Kuhan, the creator of the Real View Mirror podcast. How you doing, Kuhan?
I never really understood why you kept saying calling yourself former really known as, because you're still known as that on the boards.
And we also have with us Eric. Eric, how you doing?
Hello. Fine.
And we also have our ever-present sponsor, Andrew NDB, the creator of the GreenLanternCore.com. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. What's shaking?
All right. And a bit of sad news. We seem to have lost Musard from our cast due to...
Heard it was horrific suicide.
It's been unconfirmed as of late.
Let's just go ahead and say it.
He couldn't take the he couldn't take just everybody's. Well, there was so much hate, so he just I think he just couldn't take it anymore.
I think I was just hugging a little too hard.
Aside from that point, seeing that we're all wishing Musard the best for everything. We have right now a guest speaker. On our behalf, we have with us a prolapse, as known on the board, on the Green Lantern message boards as Cumlash, with us here tonight. Prolapse.
Hey there, guys. What's up?
Right. Rumors arise this week that WB has three new series on their slate: Mystery Inc., the new Scooby-Doo show, Young Justice, and Bruce Timm's CG Green Lantern for the fourth quarter, 2011. All of which are unconfirmed, though Young Justice seems to be already in casting, and to be legit and underway. That's big news, I suppose. What does everybody think about that?
Well, the cast, I think it's interesting, they released who the roster is supposed to be for Young Justice, because Nightwing and Connor Kent are on it.
Nightwing and Connor Kent?
Yeah. Wow. It's not Impulse. I don't know, Impulse is on it? Does anybody
Impulse was included. It's supposed to be Impulse, Connor Kent, and Tim Drake.
Is it like in any way related to the... yeah, probably not. Never mind.
I was personally surprised.
It is.
Excuse me. Anyways, I was personally surprised by that.
Wait, it is what now?
It is terribly loosely based on...
Based on the original Young Justice book?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, that's not
Martian,
right.
Aqualad, Nightwing, Impulse, Arrowette, and Connor Kent.
Black Aqualad.
Wait, Black Aqualad?
Yeah. They've chosen a Black Aqualad.
Black Aqualad? How do you know if that? Oh yeah,
I've seen the picture.
Black Aqualad. There are pictures.
There's a picture of pictures of Arrowette and Blackulad.
Oh yeah, where'd you see where?
You can find them at thegreenlandcore.com. Actually,
that was a cleverly placed plug over there.
Are you proud that I haven't made any racist jokes towards Black Aqualad?
Since I'm doing most of the Blackulad saying, it's okay. Free for all. Go ahead.
What you got? I was gonna say something about.
I wouldn't recommend it. Cool.
I was gonna say.
Don't say anything.
I'm gonna veto it.
Yeah, I'm strongly, strongly don't.
I was going to say something about swimming, but nah.
Okay.
But I'm pretty, you know, iffy on Bruce Timm CGI. Yeah. I would rather it not be like anything like Star Wars, Clone Wars. And, you know, I always thought if they were going to make a Green Lantern cartoon, it should be more anime, maybe something like Ghost in the Shell.
I disagree.
Ugh, I think no. It should be distinct. Yeah, I disagree with style. That.
Absolutely not.
I mean, as much as I enjoy Ghost in the Shell, the animated series, both seasons, I cannot see a Green Lantern show made in the same vein. It just doesn't fit the motif for me.
Not that I think it should necessarily be like a Bruce Timm sort of a thing. I mean, like traditional.
Oh, Green Lantern the animated series, as animated by Ethan Van Sciver, coming in 2100.
He actually talked about this in Emerald City last year. Bruce Timm mentioned that he said people are talking about this, like the right people are talking about this. So I guess it's becoming done for a while.
I wonder who the right people are.
I feel like
just people in WB, I'm sure, or some studio.
I mean, I feel like it's a little too late. I feel like maybe while they were doing the Superman and the Justice League shows, then they could have done a Bruce Timm style Green Lantern show, and people would have dug it. But now
the DCAU is dead.
Well, yeah,
I think this is a bigger time for it to come out. You got the movie. Comic is at its height.
I'm not saying there's anything.
I think he's trying to say there's no real big problem having an animated series, but I think the vein of the animated style, the production, is already coming past already.
We don't know what this is going to look like.
Exactly, yeah, but if it was done in the same way as you know, as Batman the animated series or Superman
like, maybe if it's more like. I don't want to say the Batman because I didn't. I mean, I like that style, but it just felt like it had a style all its own. But something more similar to that than the Bruce Timm stuff, because you know the Bruce Timm stuff is it's all its own universe, and the universe is over. Maybe if Justice League or JLU was still running, they could do that. But it's ended.
It's gone and passed. Eric,
yeah. Well, I was personally really happy with the design work on the movie First Flight. And I think it'd be cool to see. I'd rather see more direct-to-DVD movies. I mean, as much fun as it might be to see a whole series, I think they have more freedom with these direct-to-DVD movies, and they could spend more money.
Yeah, as long as there's like a steady flow of them, but a couple a year.
But that's the thing, though. They don't want to keep doing a bunch of movies of the same guy, but they can definitely.
Yeah. Unless it's Batman,
they don't want to corner themselves.
Unless it's Batman.
Well, I mean, they have done like 4 Justice League movies already.
Yeah, but that's like everybody. So.
Yeah, that's different.
I'm still waiting for my freaking fourth world movie.
That would be awesome.
I would love that.
Well, about the Green Lantern TV show, though, I think it's too soon to call. I'd rather see who's attached to it. I don't want to see James Tucker on another one of these shows. I hope they keep all the people that are on Teen Titans away from it. I want to see new people involved, and I think Bruce Timm's animations. I mean, the films and stuff, his productions. Have kind of started to kind of falter a bit. I mean, I liked Wonder Woman, I like Green Lantern a lot, and the Crisis on the Two Earths looks really great. But they've become really limited, especially by the end of Justice League, which is fighting, fighting, fighting. Which I love fighting as much as the next guy, but I want to see some more creative blood in there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And maybe the Clone Wars is maybe a good example because that show is really varied and they have different kinds of stories.
Yeah.
But it looks bad.
What are you talking about?
I don't dislike the look for that show. I mean, there's
it's animated poorly, I think.
I feel like the production quality could go up on that show, but it's not poorly. It's not like it doesn't look nice. I mean, it looks like the style. I like the style. It just the animation quality could be better. But if they
would you also rather see a design element like that where it's more of an exaggerated design of the Green Lanterns, or would you rather see something a little closer to the Tim? The typical Bruce Timm kind of like quasi blocky style? Or would you rather?
For the original style, rather than
rather have the blocky shoulders and the small head than to have the ugly face of Anakin Skywalker,
the marionette looking. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's be fair. Anakin Skywalker actually looks kind of like Hayden Christensen in that show.
Now, do you guys think that they might be leaning more towards making things sort of resemble the new movie verse, or would it be
maybe? We got to think about
not. No, probably not.
The only thing I can think is applicable. Well, the Iron Man TV show didn't.
Yeah.
But then the Spider-Man TV show did. The short.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the Spider-Man thing.
I remember the Spider-Man show.
The MTV. You're talking about
the MTV one.
Right. The 90s one. Pretty solid.
Relatively
show.
Short.
It was a solid show. It was actually.
Well, I like that show.
Also CGI.
Yeah. Right.
I think that what the deal with that was is it had a specific creative. It had two or three specific creative voices behind it. Bendis was the producer. There's a few producers on it that were pretty good, and. Something like this. I actually, you know what? I liked the Batman. I liked the design work on the first couple seasons of Batman with Jeff Matsuda and his team were involved. I think if they pick a specific artist with a really strong creative vision, even if it doesn't look anything like we've seen before in Green Lantern, I think the show could really pull itself off as something visually interesting.
My only worry is that they might gravitate towards camp or something.
Well, you, go on, what were you trying to say?
You mentioned the Iron Man show. I feel like that style maybe with little. A little more depth and more colors in there, more vibrant colors. I feel like that style could possibly work for a Green Lantern type show.
Is this the Iron Man where he's in high school show we're talking about?
That's probably what it's gonna look like. That's actually probably exactly. Yeah, it's gonna be a CG show exactly.
I feel like that is a good way to go for that. Except you know. More vibrant colors because the colors in the Iron Man show are kind of toned down.
I know it would be difficult, but I'd like something somewhere in the level of the comic world, the animated style. Well, the point being, I think it should just stick more in the style of the comics, you know? I mean, I know it would be tricky, but trying to get some of that style in animated form, although difficult, I think it would pay off in the end if they had the right budget and they were able to take the time to do so.
It's not
something you could send off to Korea to have done, but, you know.
But, you're saying have a more visual animated style like the comic books? But yeah, I mean,
like what? Like Frontier, Ivan Rice? Even?
Yeah, there's so many different artists have tackled Green Lantern over the day.
Would you want to Philip Tan?
I mean
Daryl Banks?
Like, Ivan Van Tan.
Like the thing is, Prolapse, that the I feel
Ivan
like
Van Banks.
Like the thing is, Prolapse, that I feel that the Iron Man show is capturing the essence of the comic book, but doing it in a CG animated style, and I feel like that's the way to go.
I think the bottom line is that if it's in CG, you'll see more constructs, and that's probably what the exact difference is.
Yeah,
because
they
said
definitely.
In JLA there was a lot of budgetary issues with doing constructs because of the lighting effects and just the scale of the animation. Right. So
was basically just a bunch of laser blasts in JLA, and shit like that just really makes my colon blow.
And the only time they were actually able to do actual constructs in that show was during that Hawks. Starcross. Starcross, their movie, basically.
First Flight had really limited constructs. They barely even discussed the concept.
Well, they didn't have willpower either. They just had this random green rock, which still pisses me off.
Yeah, well, everybody can have the ramifications for the rock. I mean,
here's what it is. I'm more concerned about who's creatively behind it, because I think even if it's not that well animated, like the Spider-Man TV show wasn't that well animated, but I really like that show and still think about that show. So I think, would you guys want to see Geoff Johns involved or Peter Tomasi involved, the current writers?
I mean, I'd
rather see Peter Tomasi.
No.
I would rather the same people do Wonder Woman involved. Lauren Montgomery and...
Oh, Lauren Montgomery would be a freaking...
Yeah, but she only does features, I believe, at this point. But yeah, maybe. That'd be nice if she was creative art director or something like that.
I mean, yeah, like I wouldn't mind them maybe, like, you know, every once in a while pushing in, hey, this is what the character's like in the comics. Hey, try to get people to buy the comics. And then they don't listen to them at all anyways. But... You know, or maybe something, someone more used to writing for the animated TV shows.
After that last WB Summit thing, I'm pretty sure. I know I read that Geoff Johns and Grant Morris and a couple others are part of some kind of a delegation that oversees anything that relates to the comic books.
The
Evil Council of Animation.
It's been standard, Marvel used to do that. They had people like Mark Miller come out on Iron Man, and he barely written an Iron Man comic in his life and stuff like that, yeah.
And
Brian Bendis, I think, at that point.
Maybe like Dini involved in the writing portion.
I was talking a lot when he wrote like two episodes of Batman a year, and I didn't have to deal with him. But that he's writing four Batman.
Batman the animated series is the shit.
He didn't write every single thing of Batman the animated series. That's the problem.
I can understand your hate.
It seems to be a misconception that he did.
Paul Dini wrote the whole thing.
He was in charge of the writer's room, I believe, in the series. But Alan Burnett is the guy. Alan Burnett, I believe, if I'm wrong, is the guy who wrote First Flight and Sub-Zero. I believe, unless I'm mistaken, Alan Burnett wrote Sub-Zero, the Batman animated movie, and that has like the least amount of Batman-iness, but it's an insanely well-balanced movie.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying that like Paul Dini. I'm just saying I just said Paul Dini and like Bruce Timm because those are the two people that come to mind. You can't deny that. But I was just saying, you know, those kind of people, the people that were on the team for those shows, involved in the writing portion, not necessarily in the animating portion, have a similar feel, but not necessarily, you know, not in the same universe. If you know what I'm saying.
Well, I haven't heard from Wes. You don't want to put any more shine in this, do you?
No, I'm done.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, so, I'll be allowed because I know it's a Green Lantern podcast, but I just want to say that Blackwood led. I think it kind of follows. It's not quite the same thing, but it follows the trend of they make the one guy on the team black, but he's also the one that can be conceivably not a human being. I mean, he's black, but he could also kind of just be green because he's like the Gila monster. It kind of reminds me, and I think the lightest version of this is X-Men Evolution, where they had Spike, but he was a blonde. You know, like they made it, and Batman Beyond, they had Max, who was kind of black, but of indeterminate race and had pink hair. So I think they do something to kind of make him less black.
And then the JLA cartoon where they chose John Stewart because for the sole reason that he's black, and that's why I don't like John Stewart because that's why they picked him.
I don't mind them trying to balance races and stuff like that. I just happen to believe that it's kind of grimy that when they do pick a black character, they make it a point to me like the mutants. You know, I think if they ever did a show where they had to make one of the Fantastic Four black, it would either be the Invisible Woman because you don't have to see her, or the Thing because you don't have to worry about him being black.
They didn't make John. They didn't pick John because he was black. They picked him because he had no real personality that they could use.
They picked
some people would say that about Hal before.
They did say they wanted to diversify the cast. That's why they brought Pop Girl in.
John. They picked John because he's black, and that is the only reason they picked John. That is.
That's a perfectly valid reason, I think.
Wait.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's fact. I mean,
interesting. I'm correct.
Quote unquote said that yes, the only reason he's in there is because he's black. I mean, this is.
But I think that's totally fine. I think you don't see a lot of black superheroes anywhere, especially in the media of television and kids shows. And I think, I mean, you can name on one hand. I mean, Black Vulcan, you know, and Green Lantern is officially not only the only black character without black in his name, but he actually has a whole other color in his name. So
they could have put Black Light. Wait!
Yeah, or the Black Racer or Vigen the Black.
Wasn't
exactly so. Black the Racer idea being that he was. I like that they picked a character.
I love Kirby, but damn, he had horrible names for black characters.
Wait, but wasn't John going by Black Lantern for a time?
No.
John, Jeff Johns.
No, that's only if he dies.
In a tongue-in-cheek way in a couple of issues.
All right, let's actually move on because Wes is impatient. So basically, we're gonna go into our discussion portion of our the two issues of Blackest Night that came out this week. And that is The Question and Wonder Woman number 3, the final chapter of her Wonder Woman arc for Blackest Night.
Yay.
So we're actually going to move into our Wonder Woman discussion. Because I actually wanted to see how many people actually loved this issue. I actually thought this was a good end for her actual stake in the Blackest Night here.
I'm going to start off by saying these three issues, it did not feel like, it felt like three just separate one-shots that happened to feature the same character. Because they were so disconnected and had absolutely nothing in common except for Wonder Woman.
Right, well, they were filling in.
What did you actually think about the issue itself?
I felt that it was a decent issue. It was like two pages of her fighting Max Lord and then her fighting Mera and then hey, I see into your heart and then people show up. It was just kind of
The Max Lord thing kind of brought it full circle in a way.
Yeah.
Well, I wish the Max Lord thing had been more involved. I think that was a pretty big hook for the series.
I didn't get a big sense of closure with him at all.
Why was it an entire issue of fighting with Mera and then, like, two pages of fighting Max Lord?
So basically it was just a miniseries in one issue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically.
It's not too unlike the Batman and Superman things where it's kind of like their entrance into Blackest Night, even though it's, like, towards the end of Blackest Night. But
that's one of the things I liked about the miniseries, that it made a point to kind of jump around at different timelines. I just happen to think he didn't really think it through. I think this does feel like he needed to do three, and he did this one as... Because he wanted to, and he only explores a couple of really interesting ideas in it. The differences of what Wonder Woman as a Star Sapphire can do.
And I'm not too clear on one thing. And I'll ask you guys what you think too. Like, okay, at the end of Blackest Night 6, everyone kind of unites together, including Wonder Woman as a Star Sapphire. Mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming she goes off into this issue, And then Green Lantern 50, just because she regroups with everyone at the end of this, and I'm assuming that's where Green Lantern 50 picked up, where...
Sounds about kind right.
Of, yeah, but I, why did she leave the group to have this issue? I don't understand.
No, I think this is after 50.
This can't be after 50. This cannot be after 50.
This is before. This is in the middle of 6. This
unless Hal loses parallax real fast.
It must be after
50. Oh, right, I didn't say after 50. My bad. I think it's like... Either it's in the middle of 6 or in the middle of 50 somewhere.
It's got to be in the middle of 6 because Carol recruits her in the beginning of the issue. She says specifically, "Come on, we got to go do." She explains to her exactly what they're doing at the end of 6.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So it's in the middle. It's like
so in it's in between six. Pages.
It's
in between two frames.
That's the same as the last issue before this. How the timeline didn't match up what was going on, but it doesn't. I think that's okay.
The last issue gave an excuse though because she was trapped in time with what's her name?
Well,
no.
But the
wait, Wes, I haven't heard from you.
Okay, we've heard.
That's not helping at all, Mew.
Thank you, Wes.
You mean what, prolapse?
Yeah, prolapse. There you go.
Let's hear some prolapse.
No, I think Andrew's right. It's definitely some continuity f ups. I don't remember how did GL50 end.
He became giant parallax being.
Right. Okay. So
once the Spectre fight began, it became about that.
So where was the regrouping? I mean, I don't remember.
No, this takes place at the end of Black Knight.
This takes place directly after BN.
Oh, wait. If you were to read Blackest Night 6 and then read Green Lantern 50, you would assume they never even broke up. Like they got together at the end of Blackest Night 6 and then bam, then Green Lantern 50. But this kind of implies that she separated for a minute and then came back to him at the end. Right. That's what I got.
Right. Yeah.
It's
but maybe you guys are right. Maybe it's.
It's got to be during 6 because Carol recruits her in the beginning.
And don't forget. Also, they have to deal with the fact that Mara was out of control in this issue, but she's in control afterwards.
Yeah, so this has to take place during 6.
So everybody can understand, this takes place the moment when Hal starts saying, everyone, stop fighting amongst yourselves. Oh, wait, I want these rings off these two lunatics.
Pretty much.
That's so where it takes place.
This is before the big splash page in Blackest Night 6.
Exactly.
Curiously,
I just want to know one thing. Is anyone else bothered that fact that even though it's Wonder Woman's issue, Hal gets the last line in the full splash page?
it's actually a better line than he said in the entire
book.
It's Blackest Night.
This is the best line he said in the entire Blackest Night, yeah.
It's Blackest Night that makes sense. Why does Wonder Woman keep fighting Mara? Like, what do they have with each other? Like, they were never.
I believe it's the only interconnecting thing they have in these three books.
It actually does serve one tangible purpose here, and it's to kind of explain why Mara is not like Guy or like Hal when they had the red rings, because it's like, okay, the Lasso of Truth did a little something on her, and
the ring serves a purpose. I understand that, but like, what do they have to do with each other? They have like absolutely nothing to do with each other, but they keep putting Mara and Wonder Woman together.
It's supposed to be this whole queen to princess thing.
I think it has to do with the...
They had one wild really, night.
Wait. So what are you saying, Eric?
I think it has to do... I mean, honestly, it does have to do with the fact that they're both women and female characters, and that's why they fought in the first place. I think Greg Rucka, who wrote this, is a writer who respects and is almost obsessed with doing different things with women in comics. So he probably wanted to kind of explore their relationship but past the idea of them having a battle. My big problem with the issue is we already saw them fight last issue. This whole issue felt like a wrap up of the last two issues. And as much as this is the same exact, I like the kind of this ending with Max Luthor where again Wonder Woman is not affected by her guilt about it. It's the same thing that happened at the end of the first issue, and Mara the same thing. I mean, I think it's good that they show Wonder Woman using her abilities because I think this is the only feature we're going to see Wonder Woman do anything of any significance during Blackest Night.
Right, I agree.
Appreciate that she did something.
Yeah, I can understand the fact that Max Lord, everybody keeps saying there's supposed to be some closure between her and Max Lord, but in truth, she felt nothing for the fact that she killed the guy. So, you know, I didn't mean
closure in the sense of, you know, since she killed him. I just mean in the sense that since he came back. You know?
Yeah. It does seem kind of pointless.
Closure to his return and her dealing with
him. Yeah.
Well, Ruffin has always said that he's not done with the character, so why wouldn't he cover that whenever he gets a chance to get back to Diana?
In an actual arc instead of this three-issue tie-in.
His sole purpose is to cater to Jeff's plot line, so why would he bother inserting all this history in there. He could just take this little snippet, take this random character, and make it work for this one instance, for this one moment, instead of wasting his time putting out a rushed little character moment.
You know, I think the whole series works as a character. I think this, out of all the Blackest Night miniseries, I guess the three, the three featuring the main ones, this is the strongest one. I think it represents her character very well. I think each issue makes a point to talk about one aspect of her character and represent it very well. Okay. This issue just felt kind of rushed because it felt like we already kind of discussed all these points in the last two issues. So I like that Ruck is making a point to be like, this might be the only time I get to use Wonder Woman, or this might be the only time any of these readers read Wonder Woman because they're forced to because of Blackest Night. So I want to demonstrate what I think she is. It'd be nicer if Gail Simone wrote these because I think her take on Wonder Woman is a little more palatable to fans, and I want there to be more people reading Wonder Woman. And I'm really bothered by that he keeps working her love of Batman being such a
huge
part of his life.
It's such a big chunk in her life, so apparently.
Awesome. Why does she care exactly?
Yeah, prolapse, what are you going to say?
I mean, I know they have some mild friendship, but outside of that, why should she give a shit about Batman in that way? Have they been shown that often together in romantic situations? Have I missed this?
Yes.
They've been hints.
JLA primarily.
How many hints? Batman. Enough to warrant this passionate?
Since 02, 03?
And then in the show, there was a running plot line in the Daily Show. Yeah. And Greg Ruck is one on Wonder Woman. Batman showed up a few times, and it was a couple of hints here and there. I just happen to think that Batman is such a big character that, again, you're intrinsically tying something major about Wonder Woman to Batman, because you can make it that Superman's true love is Lois Lane. You can make it that Batman's true love is Catwoman, but now Wonder Woman's true love is Batman. That limits her own internal mythology. I think her true love should be somebody like, you know,
Steve Trevor,
right? But in the last 30 years, it hasn't been treated Steve Trevor, so somebody else. You
it's the guy Nemesis, who is Steve like Trevor. 70.
He's like 70 years old.
He's
like,
married to your best friend.
Some dude. Yeah, she's like some hobo on the street.
I'd rather some invented hobo than this. Maybe that other Steve Trevor, the black guy who was aged to death.
It just sort of feels like it should be, you know, like I understand her being in love with Batman, whatever, but it shouldn't be like basically outright, hey, by the way, Wonder Woman's in love with Batman. Look at these pictures showing Wonder Woman is in love with Batman.
It seems like it's implied that it's more deep-seated, like she's not really thinking about it. It's just like
it's something I should have said but a long time ago.
But it's, you've got to admit, it's a tad heavy-handed. It's kind of forcing.
I don't know if it's forcing, but it's like it's pointless in the end because, number one, Rucka isn't writing Wonder Woman. Maybe he is in the future. It doesn't sound like it. In fact, he said he's not going to be the new writer on Wonder Woman. It's pointless in the sense that it's fun to get these hints, but we're never going to see anything realized from this.
There'll be no payoff. Exactly.
Why put it in?
Heck, he's writing Batwoman. Why not make a Batwoman?
Yeah, exactly. Batman and Wonder are never going to end up together, so there's no point in limiting her character by saying
there's no payoff. It's a fun thought to, like, you know, for the fans to fancy over, but
if this was the beginning of a new Rucka run where he was like planning on visiting this somewhere down the line, I'd be like, okay, it's like a foreshadowing, but it's not. So why even waste space?
It hurts a Wonder Woman showcase. It hurts a Wonder Woman.
How does it hurt? It
takes away space they could do for something else. So.
And it also, it limits her character by tying her to a much more popular character there's nothing about Wonder Woman in any of the Batman comics, but now all of a sudden Wonder Woman is becoming someone who's in love with Batman. So her character is limited by the fact that she's in love with this other franchise. So it's like her character's literally saying, like, I'm not as good as this other franchise. It shouldn't be something that she'd be comparing to.
That's true, though.
Well, it's Batman, it's
not as good as that franchise, though.
Wes, what are you trying to get to?
I think y'all are looking into it way too deep. It's less than an inch of a panel in that splash page. Yes, you could have switched that with something else, some other random moment of her life, but it's not like it's going to change the character forever.
Sort of does.
Yeah. Because especially she's taken over by the Black Ring. She's fighting it with the Star Sapphire Ring. And what pulls her over the edge? That she's in love with Batman. And in the issue, she calms Mara's rage by comparing her grief
and
over her dead son.
And it's almost like
Batman. So it's saying it's the most equitable love in her life, which is ridiculous.
All right, Andrew,
it's not ridiculous.
It's almost like.
Andrew's been talking about that like 5 minutes.
Wait. Let Andrew try to say something.
And it's almost like number two, it was like, you could almost be like, oh, well, that was just a one-off thing. She thought about Batman for a second, no big deal. But then this issue, it's like, oh, and then she's still thinking about Batman.
It's too important. Her character is too...
It wasn't a fluke.
The character needs definition by itself. Wonder Woman herself is a difficult character to write for, a difficult character to promote. This was a big point of promotion for her. They might have thought that linking Batman into it would make her more popular, but it ends up, what you end up doing is saying this character who should stand by herself and is represented a lot of things, and as the most known female superhero of all time and the most popular female superhero in the world, unfortunately, except I guess for Storm, you're saying that her character is someone who has a puppy dog crush on another character. It's like she's saying, oh, I love him, but he'll never love me, which is ridiculous. You're limiting a strong female character to a lovesick puppy.
Yeah. Now let me counter that with, it's just not that big of a deal.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
Let him make his point because he's trying to make it.
This crappy event, no disrespect, has been all about emotion. So if Wonder Woman is feeling that, oh my God, I never told Bruce how much I really care for him, she should be able to say that, because there's 30 other characters in the Batman family books that's saying the exact same thing.
So
Batman and Robin number 7 just had Ra's al Ghul's daughter,
Talia,
feeling the exact same emotion.
Exactly, that's exactly what it is. So,
but why Wonder Woman?
So how does that cheapen the character? Because she's feeling the same thing as somebody else.
Yeah, because she's a headliner in a franchise, taking the same thing as a fourth tier supporting character in another franchise. And this is not just Blackest Night, Wonder Woman. This is going to be the highest selling Wonder Woman comic of 5 years.
The whole time.
This is going to sell higher than any other Wonder Woman comic. You can tell by the way he's writing it, specifically writing as a showcase for all the things about Wonder Woman that we should know. And the two major emotional events in these two issues, what helps her cure Mera and satiate herself, and what helps her defeat the Black Ring, is her love of Batman, which is a love that's never been discussed in such explicitness and isn't involved in her character now, takes away from her character, because what you're doing is you're saying these major events in her life are things that Batman's not even aware of. So you're saying she's beneath Batman.
Because as we've all said before, and Eric pointed it out in the previous podcast, Batman does not sit in his cave thinking about Wonder Woman 24/7.
And neither does Wonder Woman. She's
apparently from what we've seen, she does.
These are deep-rooted emotions that would not have come out otherwise.
So then you're saying
if the situation was reversed and we saw a Batman kissing Wonder Woman panel, would you be upset? Would you say, oh no, Batman can't think about Wonder Woman because that's not the type of person he is?
No, because it doesn't exist in a vacuum, because Wonder Woman is the tertiary of DC Universe. She only exists in public because she's the only female superhero that they have that is as popular as she is. So if Batman was in love with Wonder Woman, that would be promoting Wonder Woman. This is promoting Batman. He doesn't need more promotion in a character.
It's not promotion. It's just emotion.
The thing is, Batman could have a line of other women he's actually had a relationship with. And there are men that Wonder Woman has had relationships with. Why not one of them instead of just randomly throwing a Batman who she's never run a relationship with?
You don't – okay. Here's the thing. Just because you don't you don't hold hands and go to the mall together does not mean you don't have a relationship. Batman has been with Wonder Woman longer than Catwoman. Well, no, not longer than. Okay.
No, yeah, yeah.
For a very long time.
His first night he met Catwoman.
Yep.
And if you even do the math, post crisis, Batman and Wonder Woman haven't really spent that much time together versus the way when they used to. I mean, they're in the JLA together, and the only time they had featured scenes is when, I mean, freaking Joe Kelly was writing it, for God's sake.
So,
you know, and that was a very, very, I mean, Joe that was a limited Kelly. Run.
So how about them inks?
Actually, we've gone a little bit long in the tooth in the discussion, because we're going back and forth on the fact that Batman's love and Wonder Woman's love.
Yeah,
we really didn't discuss the art that much.
We did discuss the art. We actually did have a good point, like, you know, points across in the fact that, you know, what we thought about aside of the Batman love here.
I can't tell the difference. In this issue, I can tell the difference between Wonder Woman and Star Sapphire, kind of.
That's good.
Right? That was great. Wonder Woman parts her hair in the first thing I noticed. That was the first thing I noticed. I said, wow, this is so much better than GL50.
Yeah.
Yeah, the artwork actually stepped up a bit in this one.
She seemed to have
Nicola seemed to have gotten Wonder Woman's costume right this time. I liked it a lot.
Although there was a coloring mistake on the big splash page where Wonder Woman one of the W's
right is not gold.
There's
just that one page.
And she's got weird proportion issues. I mean, there's parts where her collar is the size of her mouth, and there's parts where her collar is bigger than her hair. And then the bit where she's wrestling Mera and the bit where she dives bomb, the way she draws figures, I feel like she's drawing a lot of figures from models, and she can't quite get them to do the awesome acrobatic flying moves that Wonder Woman's doing. So she's doing awkward things like the panel where Wonder Woman jumps over Mera's back and kicks her in the back. It's awkward looking. And like I said, Nicola Scott's art walks a fine line between always looks good, but sometimes it looks great and sometimes it looks shit.
Well, as a side note, you say about the collar, but technically the collar is made of energy, so it can fluctuate in size.
It could change.
That is the magic.
Oh, I guess when she gets scared. Yeah.
That's, well, aside from that, Brandon? Anything?
Jean-Claude Brandon.
Anybody else?
My bad, I muted myself.
Wow.
No, I'm done. I was done talking anyway.
Prolapse.
The picture at the end, the splash at the end, I think is terrible too, of all the Green Lanterns.
Oh, that was a bit freaking contrived. Everything was being shoved into one.
That was like fan art, honestly.
Yeah, it was everything was being shoved into one page, and Hal Jordan gets major big spotlight.
And I like the shot of Wonder Woman. The single page splash where she's like, "Back off!" I thought that was a pretty good one.
Although I do kind of like her interpretation of Hal. Although it seems a little cartoony, but
anyone else see with the one page where they had the reference to her old bondage days with him throwing the
I like that. Yeah, I like that they changed it. That was pretty cool. Again, he's talking about everything that's ever happened to Wonder Woman in like
liberation.
Slide as you can, yeah.
It's like two pages of talking about everything good about Wonder Woman. And then she fights Mera for the rest of the book.
It's not even that big of a fight. It's just.
Am I the only one who thought that scene was missing a splash panel where she says, "I'm not a girl, Max," and then it just has her punch him when you think like something like, say like "I'm a woman" or something like that.
I think he was trying to. Specifically make the point that you really shouldn't be calling girl women girls, and she doesn't want to have to say "I'm a woman" because you don't need to say it.
Well, especially
like the way the contract like butterfly wings. That was pretty cool.
Especially since her name is Wonder Woman.
I just wanted to point that out, that when I was reading it, I was just like, please don't say it. Please don't say it. And when she didn't say it, I was so happy.
Yeah, I was relieved. I was relieved for that too, actually.
I expected
expect it, unfortunately, but then I'm glad I didn't get it.
Well, aside from that thing again, that we're getting long in the tooth here. What does everybody give it? That's a final grade.
All right, Prolapse, what's your grade?
Oh, man, fantastic issue. I love the story. I love the art. I mean, I don't like the Batman thing. That's not my dig, yo. But I gotta say, dog, I was down with it. Gotta give it a B+.
I swear to God, that was gonna get old fast.
Yeah, come on, give me your grade. All
right. It just felt sort of contrived. I don't even know what to say. I said all I could. I'm gonna give it C+.
Right, blessed.
I think I'll give it a B, a solid B for the issue, and probably a D overall for the series.
Oh God,
right. Eric, three words or less.
Didn't know who all those zombies were. B for the issue, and then B for the series, right. Mostly because the first issue was A+.
All right, Andrew.
I'd give it a solid B, like West.
Wow.
Series on a whole, maybe a C+, B.
C+ for the
minus.
Whole. B-.
C-.
B-.
B-.
All right, I give the book itself about a B-. The series as a whole, just because everything was split apart, I give it about a C+. About C+, just because everything was jumped around a bit. We're moving on to the question now.
So the question.
The question is.
What is the question?
No. The question is,
what did West
42.
Think of
this?
He's been waiting for this.
The question is, what's the meaning of life?
42.
West?
No, 42 is the answer to life. Continue.
I was so disappointed in this.
Oh, thank God.
So disappointed in this.
Why don't you elaborate a bit?
Just keep cutting yourself.
No. Just I was disappointed. That's it.
Well, guys.
I was so disappointed in this issue that I went back and looked at my previous issues of The Question just to make sure it wasn't this bad when it was first published, and it wasn't. I don't know what Dennis was thinking, but he needs to tighten up his art, like, right now. It was ridiculous how sketchy this art was. Story-wise, I didn't have too much of a problem with it. I mean, given it wasn't the story I wanted, but hey, it's Blackest Night. I've lowered my expectations. Tot really pissed me off because it's such a drastic change from what we're getting now in Detective Comics. This big, angry, greedy Tot that we got in this issue was just too different from past Tot and current Tot. It's just like, where does this come in at? And yeah,
you can't blame a guy for wanting to, you know, find out the meaning of life.
I don't have a problem with Shiva showing up because she was
Shiva.
You know.
Shiva?
Wait, Shiva? Shiva?
Shiva.
She Jewish?
Not like yeah.
Maria Shiva.
I'm sorry, it's not like I have a freaking audio book next to my comics that I can press whenever I
yeah, but you can read.
Wait. I'm wondering, how long have you been calling her Shiva?
Terry Shiva.
We call
Shylock.
Tallulah, yeah, Tallulah Al Ghul and Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga.
Okay. Continue, Wes.
I still enjoyed it because the lady assassin.
Shiva.
No way, Kuhan, please.
I'm sorry.
He's scared to say it now.
Because Shiva was interesting. I enjoyed her in this issue.
I enjoyed her being in this issue too.
Exactly. You know what? I think that's all I have to say. Bad art, decent story. Aside from Tot being completely out of character for any appearance he's ever made, I still enjoyed it as a story. The art was bad at first, but you know, you get used to it after you make it past the first couple of pages.
Is this the same art team from the regular series?
Yep.
No? Is it?
Oh well, technically, Bill. I don't know how to say his name.
Sienkiewicz.
Sienkiewicz?
No, not Cohen. Cohen is the usual. Bill Sienkiewicz or whatever. Bill S. is...
Billy!
I blame him for the sketchiness because he's used to outlandish art.
He's generally pretty sketchy.
No,
right.
I always thought of him as more shady.
But there's two inkers.
I don't blame the inkers. I mean, I don't notice the inkers, but I don't blame the inkers for this because...
You just said you blame the inker.
No, I don't blame the inker. I don't notice. I don't notice the inker. I blame
Canada.
Bill for adding his art to this story, and it probably hurt more than it helped.
And Bill is the inker.
How rude of him.
No, I think he actually...
They do their job?
Pencils is Dennis, and then inks is Bill. Bill and John.
Okay, but then Bill is completely at fault here.
But there's the other way around.
But there's two inkers.
I think Dennis Cowan's art has kind of moved on to this in the last few years. He did the storyline Lovers and Mad Men. I forget who the inker on that was for the Batman Confidential series and looked really similar to this. This is just how he draws now. And I think that's – Dennis Cowan is kind of in the field of – what's the guy's name? Claus Janssen and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, Claus Janssen.
Do is they have complicated line work that looks unstructured but forms structure. And if you actually look at things like – at the last couple pages, you think every time the Question's jacket shows up, it looks like an insane amount of sketches, but what it's doing, it's drawing wrinkles, it's drawing form, it's drawing shape, and if you remove the sketchiness from it, it loses shape. And that's why a lot of the muscles look interesting, that's why his joints are really interesting, which seems like a weird thing to pick out, but that bit where a Question is blocking all of Shiva's moves was an awesome piece of choreographed art. I think the fighting in this issue is, it seems like limited to talk about that, but the issue is so much of this is martial arts, and there's some of the best drawn fighting I've seen in a really long time.
Did you just say issue?
I might have.
Okay, anyways, I don't care. Anyway,
you want to bring it up? No, and I think, Todd, I could see why it'd be irritating, but I from what I remember, it's been a long while since I read the Denny O'Neill stuff, but Todd's always been a little kind of ambiguous, and I think writing him as non-ambiguous kind of hurts the character. And I like that that's a different perspective to take to Blackest Night, because you'd think that more characters would be interested in asking what the afterlife is like. And I am a really big fan of the way Montoya is written as a question, I think. She's got a lot going on as a character, and she seems so limited. And, I mean, I like that she just goes around in a tank top karate fighting people all the time. More people should be doing that, I think. I don't like Shiva ever when she's portrayed as noble, but that is the tradition of her being portrayed in the Question books. I like that this issue was so much about what I complained about, that so many of the one-shots weren't about the series they were supposed to be continuations of. This was about that while forming a couple of other points. I like the bit where they used meditation to turn themselves off. I don't know if I would have loved it if somebody else had done it, but the way it's written, paced, and drawn, I think it really sold itself. And I laughed out loud when Shiva disappeared.
Just disappeared into thin air.
That was awesome, I thought.
It was just terrible.
It was actually pretty good. But ridiculous.
And the fact that it was called One More Question, I think, was perfect. That was couldn't think of a better title for the one shot. One More Question.
I mean, I don't really know much about the question. Do you
have any questions?
Shut up, Pro.
Kuhan, continue.
Anyways, I don't really know much about the question, and I liked what I've seen and what I've heard, but I mean this issue kind of it just was sort of dull to me. And there was a lot of fighting and stuff, but I didn't really know what was going on, so it just felt really a little bit dull to me. Yes, it just raised too many questions.
Kuhan, ignore it.
one question too many.
If you feed it, it will come back.
And you see how it spreads more and more.
Anyways, so about the art, I can see how this art would be good, and I can totally understand what you're saying. This just feels in place for what the question should normally be. It does feel very in place in a noir book. But this isn't as much of a noir book, because the question is sort of a noir book, right? Am I right in that?
Well, I mean, noir is kind of a general term. It's not really, actually. When the question that's referenced in this, and the one that's referenced when Renee Montoya is in it, is he's more of like a Buddhist kind of like centrist book. It's more about meditation and New Age shit. So it's very un-noir. It seems noir because he's got a fedora on.
Right, yeah.
The fedora makes it noir.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, it's kind of true. You got a fedora and a trench coat, so it's noir automatically. Okay, the one thing that was so weird to me was on the last page, it looks like Renee Montoya has her mouth stitched shut.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I know what the question's mask is like, but it does not look like, it's not supposed to look like her mouth is stitched closed. It looks so weird.
It's like a scarecrow all of a sudden.
Yeah, it was so, like, what is what?
Jack Skellington.
Yeah, right?
Well, that's a nitpick, so.
The art.
Maybe she just ate a grilled cheese sandwich over a mask.
I'm glad you brought that up, Kuhan.
Or just bit into a lemon or something.
I'm glad you brought that up, Kuhan, because I see you're still talking. Right, Kuhan?
I'm what?
Continue talking, Kuhan. That's what I mean to say.
Okay. I wasn't really sure what you're trying to do there. Okay. But yes, as I was trying to say, the art, I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It feels just, I mean, like, it feels like purposely sketchy. Like I understand what I understand what Eric was trying to say, but then at some point it feels like it's just paint. It's just like colors splattered on the page. It just
means like no inks.
It's like someone trying to like take caveman art and try to make that into a popularized art form.
Anyways, it was just confusing to me.
I wish we saw more art like this in mainstream comics. I think too much art is like the Ed Benes, Ivan Reyes type art, which is a lot of busy lines that don't have any kind of artfulness to how it's paced and placed and stuff. I mean, there's some panels in this that are just amazing. Every jump kick is awesome. The bit where the question is jump kicking someone while a building's exploding behind or whatever's going on.
That was an amazing panel.
Everybody, I maybe want to read this the entire question series all over again.
I think I know what I'm trying to say. The art in this book felt like it was good art, but it didn't feel like it was. It didn't feel like it fit as sequential art to me at points.
No. I want to say that it's that a lot of that has to do, and I don't want. I'm not judging anybody, but I want to say that a lot of that has to do with the way that people are trained to kind of expect from their comics nowadays. I think you see a lot of stuff like I want to. I keep saying Ed Bennis, but I think he's a good example because I can't say Mark Silvestri or Rob Liefeld anymore because they don't really draw, thank God, anymore. But it's the kind of like just the poor draftsmanship and a lot of like just overt angles and I mean the way Dennis Cowan draws, it's not quite as good as his compatriots like Klaus Janson and stuff. But that he has a similar style to, but the way he paces the story and the way things play out are great. I mean, he makes just the right panels large. He puts the panels in just the right spot. And the fact that he has such sketchy art, but the differentiations in the panels are so clear. I mean, I think, I don't know. I wish more comic books like this that were mainstream.
The weird thing is...
And and one of the great things is that, unlike most artists which are today, especially the Ivan Reese's and the, you know, the Ed Bennis's out there, It doesn't actually have to depend upon gigantic splash pages.
Yeah, you couldn't make a poster out of any one of these. You made a painting out of any one of these, but you couldn't really make a poster out of anything in these, which is almost like, I want to say it seems silly, but essential to like sequential art, that no image by itself is really going to be able to stand on its own, or maybe they all should be able to stand on its own. I mean, maybe I'm...
I actually want to ask Andrew. I haven't heard him in a while.
Let me say one last thing.
I'm glad you listened to me, Guhan.
I'm glad I listened to you too. I'm totally listening to you. It's like they can all turn themselves sort of into Dove, where they're just it's like.
Didn't Dove appear as just a scramble?
Yes.
But she still showed up. She didn't disappear. She was just a scramble.
We're talking about, but this is a completely different. It's like a philosophy. It's a sense of identity.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just pointing out how Kuhan was trying to explain it.
Sorry.
Not quite the same thing as
his reference wasn't as good.
I mean, it's not perfect, but it's something like that.
No, yeah.
I can understand what you're trying to say just because, you know, you saw that squiggly line there for a second. I mean, that's the only, for whatever reason, that's how Black Lantern's
Just imagine how bad it would be if someone had to scratch their nose and Will came up for a second and start scratching their nose.
I'm glad for that.
You are so funny. Has anyone ever told you that? You're hilarious.
I was trying to say that Black Lanterns apparently cannot register something. That's what they use that little text bubble of a squiggly line. So we see that for a second only because it's the appropriate use. Dove is still seen there because she generates a white light, which apparently is a light, which is still a, you know, because they see things in a light spectrum, apparently.
Yeah,
and the emotional spectrum is laid out in different colored lights. So.
Yeah, overall, I want to give, if I could, go quick grade. I think it represented a lot of stuff really well. It was a little disappointing considering how good it could have been, but I think it did hit a lot of notes that I think I had lowered expectations for it because of everything else that was going on Black Knight, so I was really happy with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say A. I would give it an A+ if it just did a little bit more of what I wanted it to, but there was just too much going on for it for me not to like really love this issue.
Andrew, what grade do you give it?
I'm really indifferent towards it. I just couldn't get past the art. I mean, I really wanted to say that I have such an evolved sense of taste in art that I just I love the squigglies, I love this and that, but I can't. I mean, it was a labor to read this. It took me about 3 attempts. I mostly enjoyed it, and I love Dennis O'Neill. On the whole, I mean, he's a big part of my early comic book reading, so it's good to see him get work. I'm not a big Question fan, but this was it was a bit of a labor for me, but I give it a fair C+.
I'm glad you're not too big to admit that you can't love the artwork for just the fact it was art.
I feel towards Scott Collins. Like I can respect. I see the merit and the style, but I just it doesn't connect with me personally.
Although
you suck.
Although
Frank Quietly really alienates a lot of people too. Frank Quietly with somebody I really want to see that fucking guy draw a goddamn Green Lantern comic.
Oh yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, it'll come out in 3 years.
Prolapse.
Draw me a picture. That's all I want.
Prolapse.
Yeah, that'll come out in 3 years.
Evolved a lot over the years too.
It has.
Like you look at his work in like JLA or Earth 2, right?
And yeah, it was Earth 2.
Big improvement.
I like that stuff too.
You said that was bad.
Yeah, no, I think that was bad. It wasn't bad, but it's just that much better now.
I think he's become more dynamic. But anyway, Prolapse.
Yeah, Prolapse. I was trying to get to. What is your grade?
Overall, I like the art. I like the story. I mean, the Todd thing was kind of iffy, but that's kind of the thing you kind of expect from some people, that they want to question life and all those bits. Overall, I'll give it a straight B. I think that's fair.
All right, West.
C minus.
Care to elaborate?
No.
He's already spent the entire time elaborating.
How do you split that up between the writing and the art? Just curious.
It would be a D minus if I relied on the art.
And so it would be D minus for the art, C minus for the story?
It would be whatever an average between a B and a D minus.
Okay. Kuhan.
Like I said earlier, I can see this art well as art. It's art. It just didn't feel. And Andrew was comparing it to Scott Collins, but Scott Collins is Scott Collins is like a happy medium between this and, you know, straight up Ed Bennis and stuff. Anyways, as for this comic, what?
Why do you hate Ed Bennis so much? It's not even that bad.
He doesn't like the ass shots.
He's just terrible. Ed Bennis is an awful, awful artist.
Yes,
Ed,
he's not into girls.
Finally, Ed Bennis is an awful, awful artist.
I like girls plenty. I just don't. Ed Bennis is terrible.
I get it. You're not an ass man.
Kuhan, what's your final grade? Can he get his grade up?
Okay, my grade is a C.
Can he get his grade up?
Okay, it's a.
Wow.
It's C.
Is that C, right? You said C?
C.
Thank you. I like the artwork for the question. For this one shot, again, I agree with most of the points that, you know, that Eric is amazing, that this is a great continuation story of what was going on in the previous question storyline and the storyline that was going on for Renee Montoya. So you know what? It was a good end for one shot tie-in that basically is like most books, which we count as good for the series, takes away from the actual Blackest Night and actually writes his own little story piece, just having to, you know, stick in a Black Lantern into it. So you know, I give it a high grade. I actually give it an A
Can we give it an applause?
PGA clap, PGA tour.
That the Make It Fat?
Yeah, it's the Make It Fat from Andrew.
Make It Fat.
As you be sure to visit thegreenlanterncorps.com, where you can find the latest news, reviews, interviews on all things Green Lantern. While you're there, check out the message boards and interact with us and other friends. Be sure to send us any hate or love mail at the contact@glspotlight.com. You can also find our YouTube channels at youtube.com/glspotlight. youtube.com/NeilDoubleBane, and youtube.com/Kuhan. Not to mention, you can also follow half of the cast via Twitter at twitter.com/GLSpotlight, twitter.com/Kuhan, and twitter.com/ConsciousB. Also, check out Ryan's blog at www.GLSpotlight.com.
Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps are properties of DC Comics. Do not reflect the authenticity of this podcast.
Tell a thousand years ago, we fire so hot. A carving and a man and a super plan, and his name was Alan Scott. A man without fear, and that's for sure. He got his ring from Arkansas. He fought all the evil hordes, and he's the real one, Hal Jordan. Green Lantern! Green Lantern!
Oh, West, someone wants a t-shirt of you and me.
No, they don't. They want me.
They want a t-shirt?
They just want a t-shirt.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
We can also hear you.
That sandwich.
Pizza.
I just wanted to point out, you remind me of someone. I can't put my finger on it, though.
It's your mother.
Do not attack Kuhana.
I'm not. I just happen to think I think you should wipe your ass with Dini and throw him in the garbage. Dini is terrible.
Does he hate Paul Dini? Yeah.
I think it seems like kind of the thing they throw back to, though, the specific one from the book itself.
I think this is irrelevant.
I think you're a whore.
real quick, West, I'm sure I hate Ed Bennett for the same reasons you hate Mark Bagley. Anyways.
What's wrong with Mark Bagley?
Mark Bagley deserves to be shot.
I like
twice.
Mark. No.
Jim Lee does draw one comic. It's called All Star Batman and Robin. And when was the last one come out?
It's All Star. Genius.
I'm telling you guys, Mark Bagley has been confirmed for Multiversity with Grant Morrison.
Yeah, and I will kill him before he gets a chance to put the pen to the paper.
Too late. It's fine. He's already on the entire series.
What if Grant Morrison jumps in the way of the bullet?
Then Grant Morrison has to die.
Wow.
Wow. That's
Mark Bagley's greater than a
club. He's pretty adamant about this.
I would be really upset about that.
He's pretty adamant about
that. How do you hate Mark Bagley more than you love Grant Morrison? That's just irrational.
Loving Grant Morrison is your thing. That's your niche. That's the thing you do.
Oh my God.